MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
No! Oh my God! How could he do that?
Are you on drugs? What?
Charles Darwin.
The nerds is where it's at.
Welcome everybody back into Nerd Sesh. As always, I'm Carson Brebber, and alongside me is Logan Camden. And boy, oh boy, do we have some wild NBA free agency news to react to already. A couple of big signings, but the prevailing storyline is not about an actual free agent. It is about Kevin Durant, who has requested a trade out of Brooklyn. He has named the Suns and the Heat as his preferred landing spots. The Suns are currently the odds-on favorite to be his next team. But of course, there is intrigue from all around the league and a few teams that can make some interesting packages. So, Logan, first thing I'll ask you is just, what's your reaction to that decision from KD? And when you look around the league, what are some of your preferred landing spots for him?
We talked about this yesterday when we finally met up because it was the prevailing news of the day. My favorite landing spot for him is Memphis. I would just love to see a young team like that, get their leader, get another guy who can put them over the top, because Memphis is deep enough to the point where I feel like they can give up assets and not suffer too much. You know what I mean? Phoenix, I really do wonder if you can keep bridges, if you can keep all of these assets in going out and acquiring KD. Now, of course, if it comes to that, you're going to give it up, right? You're going to give up KD to go out and get somebody. You're going to give up bridges or somebody like that if it means that you land KD. But he's such an important member to what this team does and how he plays so perfectly off ball. So I want him to go to a team that has enough assets to where they can land KD and not really suffer too much. And in a hypothetical Memphis trade, you're giving up like Triple J, a couple picks, and then another young guy, and they're super deep. And so I don't really think they suffer all that much. And I also think a point that you made initially when this news broke that he wanted to go to Phoenix, he's not making the bitch move of going to the best team in the West. He's going to a team that genuinely needs him. You know what I mean? And I think Phoenix needs him too, because I think Phoenix's window is closed if they don't land a guy like KD, because Chris Paul is getting up there in age. You were losing DeAndre Ayton this offseason. And Devin Booker just isn't that guy. He's not a killer to the point where he is going to carry this team through the playoffs on his back, Luka Doncic style, which with the current construction of the roster, I think they need somebody like that. So Memphis is my ideal spot. I would love to see him go there. I don't know, like other landing spots, I thought Dallas maybe, team him up with Luka. It makes sense in terms of going back to Texas. Phoenix will probably be my favorite out west if he goes there. Miami may very well be my favorite out east if they can somehow keep Bam and Jimmy as well. And I believe the Nets can't acquire Bam for some reason too in a hypothetical trade. So anywhere KD goes is probably going to become my new favorite. But I would love to see him go to Memphis just because I do think Phoenix is a bit of a cop-out.
Yeah, that would be very fun. And KD is an interesting person to assess in that he is probably more invested in the pure basketball product compared to other superstars. Normally, you think Memphis as a destination for any top five guy. Very, very unlikely. They're going to have to draft a Ja Morant. They're not going to land. Obviously, this isn't free agency, but still a trade where he probably has some degree of decision-making in where he lands. But, I mean, they certainly could offer a pretty good package back to Brooklyn, and it is a really interesting basketball situation. I do think Miami is pretty interesting. You're right, they can't include Bam, and so it would probably be a package centered around Hero and then additional pieces and picks, which maybe isn't the best high-end asset. Actually, certainly isn't the best high-end asset that Brooklyn could get back, but would be a really fun basketball situation. Oh my goodness. Adrian Wojnarowski just tweeted that Utah is trading Rudy Gobert to Minnesota. Wow. Wow. What?
My mouth is on the floor.
What is going to happen to Karl-Anthony Towns? How could those two possibly play together? Okay, well, anyways, I guess I'll keep talking about KD while we get the details of that. Wow. Great time to do a podcast. So, I think that, like you said, I mean, KD can literally help anywhere. When you are adding the most skilled scorer of all time, it's incredible what he can do to elevate any team. We saw even with the greatest regular season of all time, the two-way force with a top five player and an incredible supporting cast that the Warriors were, having that next-level release valve, that guy who can drop 35 with incredible efficiency on any night in any matchup, I mean, that is an invaluable weapon. So anywhere in the league, obviously, KD is going to take them to a completely different level, and really, it's tough to think of many packages that I wouldn't be able to give up for him, even if you're talking about a near 34-year-old who has been a little bit brittle over the last few seasons. I just really don't care. If you're good enough to where Kevin Durant is putting you in the championship conversation, you do it. You make it happen, and you go get him. And I think that that is true almost regardless of the asset.
What contender could KD go to where you still have some self-respect for him and actually, you know, like appreciate where he's going?
That is a phenomenal question. I think that honestly Memphis falls into that tier. The thing that's so ironic is that he literally requested the 2-1 seeds. And I think that Phoenix was in a different tier as a team than Miami last year. I mean, they won 14 more games, right? But nevertheless, the optics of literally, yes, I would like the best team in each conference, please. It's so hilarious. And I will go on a little bit of a spiel here before I answer your question, just because I think that obviously KD's two rings in Golden State are probably weighted less heavily in the eyes of most people when you're talking about all-time players and their rings than probably anybody else, because they were simply put easier. And that's not to say that KD wasn't phenomenal, that he wasn't incredibly important in all of that, but he joined one of the greatest teams ever. And they kind of cruised with the exception of a series against the Rockets in 2018. So, and also, we know how incredible they were without KD throughout that entire run, and now they've come back and they've won another ring without him, and they won a ring before him. So all of those circumstances, obviously, probably devalue those rings to a certain extent. And then, for his subsequent legacy to be, I'm going to try to build a super team in Brooklyn. I'm going to get Kyrie Irving and James Harden on my team, and it's going to be a catastrophe. And then, now I'm going to try to find another destination where I can just hop on perhaps literally the best regular season team in basketball last year, even though I think we expected some regression and we'll have to give assets up. It doesn't really matter, man. Like, it's just optically atrocious because every ring in the NBA should be incredibly hard to come by. And no ring is easy, but the 2017 Warriors ring was easy. Like, it legitimately probably was the easiest path to a title that we've seen. And so it's incredibly difficult, I think, to look at all this and just think like, yeah, KD still has a path to really thoroughly elevating his stature all time. Because I honestly did think in Brooklyn, at least he was building something of his own. He wasn't hopping on something that was completely established. If he had tried to go forward from this point, I mean, that was going to be an uphill battle. You win a ring like that, that really, really carries some weight. You win a ring anywhere, it carries weight, but it's just like, what is he going to do now that allows him to surpass a Steph or a Shaq or a Kobe or a Larry Bird, who are the guys in that back end of the top 10. I just don't think it's really possible if you're going to go to the best team in the league, the best regular season team in the league. Now, when you talk about the best destinations, I think actually what we need to consider is that, and this is a point that Jason Timpf made yesterday when I did a free agency show with him for The Volume, Hoops Tonight. Obviously, the Nets have a significant incentive to just try to get the best assets back that they can. And so I think, honestly, maybe my favorite destination for KD would be going to New Orleans in a Zion swap. And if I were New Orleans, I would 100% do that. I wouldn't bat an eye. I mean, Zion is a phenomenal all-time talent, but also is a guy who's played 85 games in 3 years, and there's just a level of uncertainty there that I would still say, yeah, I'll take 33-year-old Kevin Durant. And I don't know that their roster is championship caliber, but that's a lot of shot-making and playmaking from your lead three guys. They have really good defensive pieces on the wings. And so, yeah, it's probably not the best basketball situation, but it's a good basketball situation. It's a legitimate and honorable one where you're joining a good team, but, you know, not a top three team in the league last year. And, I mean, it makes a whole lot of deal for the Nets because you're not getting a better asset than Zion, even with the question marks. It's Zion Williamson. We know what he's capable of. He averaged 27 a game on 65% true shooting or whatever it was last time we saw him healthy.
All right, so I got two follow-ups then. Who is throwing in extra assets in a hypothetical trade between New Orleans and Brooklyn?
That's a good question. I honestly don't know that there needs to be that much. But, I mean, I think that the Pelicans might need to just throw in another guy to make the contracts work. Probably Valanciunas, because Zion is still on that rookie deal, and even though it's, you know, a number one overall pick rookie deal, you got to do a lot to make cap match. But I think Zion and Valanciunas is a pretty reasonable offer for KD. Logan is having his earth shattered by something.
All right, so I have the official details of the Rudy Gobert trade right now. I'll get to those in a minute. D'Angelo Russell was not involved in the trade, though. The Wolves managed to keep D'Lo and still get Gobert.
Okay. Wow.
So another question. Would you do it if the trade was BI for KD? Would you also consider something like that? Or is the incentive to get rid of Zion because we don't think he's going to play super long?
Well, I just don't think BI is as good of a carrot to dangle for the Nets. Yeah. I mean, he's obviously really good, but Zion, even with the question marks you have, hey, healthy, this guy's probably going to be a top five player in the league. I mean, he was a top 15 player in his second year, I would say.
You know what, though, Carson? I do think there is one destination that KD could go to redeem himself in the eyes of everybody. Go to the Washington Wizards and win an NBA title, KD. You will fully redeem yourself in the eyes of everybody if you go give that bum-ass franchise an NBA title. You go home, you know, you're from Maryland. You go home, you give your hometown city a title. You and, I guess, Denny Avdija is the second best player there. You know, you, Johnny Davis, torching stuff. Oh, no, Bradley Beal came back. I forget. I just cannot. I have, in this entire time, I have been under the impression that Beal was leaving. That's such a stupid signing. No, yeah, actually, you got a co-star. Go there with Bradley Beal. Go win a title.
What are the assets?
Oh, no, so, you know, you are giving up Bradley Beal. No, then it's just KD's team. You think it's like a 40-win team?
Yeah.
Do the Wizards make the playoffs if they give up Beal for KD?
I don't know. The East is really good, man, and it's deep. And KD calls himself a god, but he's not literal god. Like, he's not carrying that team to 50 wins. No way.
You got Kuz. Yeah, Corey Kispert.
Yeah. Do you agree with me on the legacy aspect, though? Because
I think if KD does a move like this, I think if he goes to Phoenix, if he goes to Miami, and he wins a title, I don't know if there's any other ones where I'm like, man, it's, you know, it's a really bad look. If he goes to one of those two spots and wins a title, I mean, I think he cements himself outside of the top 10 forever. And, like, I don't mean that. It's just like, it's such a punk move. It really is like a punk move. And I'm not saying he has to stick in Brooklyn, because I think Brooklyn is one of the most shittily run organizations in basketball. I think it is a poor destination. I think it's I think the front office is mismanaged. I think that it's just kind of chaotic. There's no history there, and they have no future assets. So I don't blame KD for wanting to get out. I think it would work. I think it's the best move for both sides. The Nets have no capital moving forward. They have inadvertently, when they were in the depths from, you know, 2013 to 2018, 2019, it was really dark times. You had no picks. The Celtics had all of them. You sucked. Timofey Mozgov was your best player, which Carson actually has a jersey of, funnily enough, a Timofey Mozgov Nets jersey.
Okay. He was never their best player. Yeah,
but you do have a jersey, though. But they've inadvertently, because of that, you know, the Pierce trade, where they go all in, they did it again when they got Harden. And they have no future assets. So I do think it is in the interest of both parties. The Nets need future assets. KD wants to go to a contender. I would still look to move KD and Kyrie both, but if KD does go to one of these top contenders and win a title, I think it cements himself outside of the top 10 for the rest of his career. And if he doesn't win a title, that's an even worse look, because that is a reality. A team like Phoenix still scares me because of Chris Paul getting older, injury concerns, guys just staying healthy. You are losing DeAndre Ayton. That's a major asset. And you have to give up assets to get him. So there is still a world in which KD goes to one of these top contenders and they don't win a title, and that's even worse. I think if he goes to one of these top seeds, though, he is pigeonholing himself outside of the top 10 forever. I can't respect that KD never did it. Like, I'm not saying by himself, but he was never just big dog carrying the supporting cast. He got close.
Yeah, it is interesting because, again, I did this show with Jason Timpf yesterday, and he made the point when I kind of asked that question of KD's never going to win the court of public opinion, so he might as well go out and win all the trophies and all the rings that he can. And I understand that to an extent. Like, at the end of the day, if it doesn't matter to him how he's perceived, then go out there and win every ring you want. The thing is, I just think it does matter to him how he's perceived.
Exactly. We know that's bullshit. KD might be the thinnest-skinned superstar in sports history.
And I don't think there's a world in which he would have left Golden State if he didn't care about how he was perceived. Like, obviously, we don't know about all the inner workings of the chemistry and dynamics of that team. But, I mean, that is the dream basketball situation, right? If your goal is just win rings, I mean, they would have waltzed into every ring every year that they were healthy. So, it is interesting. I don't know. And it's not like the end-all, be-all of everything is, hey, is Kevin Durant going to be a top 10 player of all time, right? Like, we draw these lines, and these are interesting things for us to talk about. But it's just like, man, when you are unequivocally one of the 10 most gifted basketball players to ever live, I mean, truly, I believe the most gifted scorer of the basketball to ever live, to not give yourself a legitimate chance after his first stretch with OKC to be the guy and to fight that battle where, I mean, it's something that you have built and it's yours. And it's like, yeah, that's the all-time stuff. You know, I mean, being the clear guy is something that every top 10 player has on their resume. You know, like, sure, Kobe had his three rings with Shaq, but he had his two rings where his second best player was Pau Gasol, and Steph had his pair of rings with KD. He also has his pair of rings alone. And Bird obviously was the top guy on all three of his teams. Magic was winning rings post Pete Kareem. I mean, it's just universal with these guys. Even like within this generation, Kawhi, Giannis, those rings I just think are flat out more impressive than KD's two, even though KD is one of the most remarkable finals performer in those back-to-back years that we've ever seen. I mean, he was damn near flawless. But it's just like, he's never going to have that moment, remarkably. His moment is going to be a couple of shots from the same spot in two final series that were never close because his team was just that much more talented. Like, that's really a shame, I think, for a guy who is this level of a basketball genius. And obviously, we don't know where he's going to end up. We don't know the exact circumstances. Sure, there's a world in which he goes to the Suns, but Book gets hurt. KD averages 38 a game. They still win the title. That's an all-time moment. That's an apex moment. But it would be a bummer to me if he went to Phoenix. Like, even Miami were on a different level. I mean, Phoenix won 64 games last year, bro. 64 games. They were lapping the league in the regular season.
I mean, they suckered us in. We thought they were the, like, no-brainer. Suns were going to roll to the title. It was there to lose.
And so then to just hop on that for the second time in your career, when the time you tried to build something, it completely collapsed. It's just a bummer. It's not the ideal situation for Kevin Durant's basketball career, in my opinion.
I saw a fun little stat on Twitter yesterday. Steph and Clay played more games together this season than Kyrie and KD did in their entire time in Brooklyn, 3 years. And you know, other circumstances, the Kyrie vax stuff, just kind of interesting to look at, man. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest failed super team of all time, no doubt about it, bro. If you want to get to the Gobert trade, the official details. So the Wolves are getting Rudy Gobert. The Jazz get Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverley, Walker Kessler, Jared Vanderbilt, Leandro Balmaro, and I believe three firsts. Minnesota's getting a 23, 25, 27 first, and a top five protected 29 first. So a lot of capital. I just cannot believe that Utah somehow did not land D'Angelo Russell. And I get this is like a salary dump. They just want Gobert off the books because he's getting like $45 million. It's kind of wild. I also stylistically, I'm wondering how the hell this is going to work. The running cat at the four, Gobert at the five. I'm kind of floored, Carson, honestly. I was not expecting this today, and I was not expecting Minnesota to be the destination. I don't know how you run those two on the floor together. That's kind of nightmarish. I don't know. Cat's slow-footed as a four. There are solid perimeter defenders here, but you're giving up Pat Bev. I don't know, man. This is going to be weird.
I mean, first of all, just one last thing on the KD point. I think you're right about the most epic failure of any super team ever. Previously, I think we would have pointed probably to the 12-13 Lakers with Nash and Dwight and Powell and Kobe, and you know they won 42 games or whatever. But like, I think this is next level. This team was more talented. All the guys came together in their primes. They had multiple years where that was the case. You can't really blame injuries. I mean, they were healthy this postseason, and last year you could blame injuries, but it's an all-time catastrophe.
I mean, if you had to blame anything outside anything, more than anything else, I'd probably say ego, personality, like genuinely. And it's just kind of weird because I agree with you. Maybe the three most talented players we've ever seen in the super team, at least offensively.
Yeah.
And it comes down to, yeah, personality clashes more than anything else.
I mean, dude, they couldn't keep James Harden for a full second season. They were the best offense of all time 2 years ago. They were the best offense ever. But, alas, they were just, I guess, destined to undo themselves. Okay, let's talk Gobert. That is interesting value. I don't love giving up three firsts and even like a couple of legitimate rotation pieces for Rudy Gobert, who is going to cost you $47 million in 2025-26. Four first-round picks? Oh, because top five protecting 2029. Yeah, you're right. That's totally going to be another one. And I love Leandro Balmaro, too. I mean, Jared Vanderbilt and Pat Bev were legitimately important to what the T-Wolves did this year and are good value propositions to have, and I just do not understand how this fits. KOC says the Gobert Towns front court is going to be so nasty. Yeah, like gross. Yeah. Like, dude, I mean, that is such a weird basketball fit. I'm obviously, Cat is extremely versatile offensively, and you can move him around and have him initiate from a bunch of different places. He's got the pump and go game, and he's got obviously the blazing 3-point shot, and he doesn't have to be a straight up post presence or even a straight up pick and roll man. I mean, he can kind of kill you from anywhere, but nevertheless, you know, I don't think you want to play him alongside another traditional plodding center because, like, they're going to be slow, man. And just when I look at this team, I mean, sure, they wanted to improve their interior defense. I get that. But I don't love Cat guarding fours all the time in today's NBA. And it's just like, out of all the top 30 NBA players they could have added, I don't know that Rudy Gobert would have been at the top of the list for me. But, I mean, it will make them better. They're more talented. But they gave up a lot, and it doesn't make them a title contender. Like, we'll see how much Ant can ascend, because he is ultimately the key here. I mean, what they need is incredibly reliable perimeter star creation. They couldn't get that from D'Lo, and as good as Ant was this year, he's not quite at what a title team needs from the perimeter and what I think Ant can and will be. But it's just a matter of when, and like, oh my God. I mean, the money they're going to be paying to their top few guys is just unfathomable. Like, they are going to be building around them with minimum deals. Draft picks and minimum deals is all that they're going to get in the MLE.
What draft picks? I mean,
great point.
Yeah, dude. That's kind of my big takeaway is you've got two contracts that are really hard to move, and you're going to have to pay Ant very soon. Yeah, I think it makes him better. I don't think it makes him a title contender. I don't like this fit. Like, don't get me wrong. Moving Cat to the four is not going to completely negate what bringing Gobert into the mix defensively, right? It doesn't completely, like, take away moving Cat to the four. Gobert, it's still going to be a great defense. Gobert is still going to make this team great on that end. It's just weird. And offensively, I don't know, man. I do think they are going to suffer offensively. Like, I don't know, man. I'm not giving Gobert post touches down on the block. Pass the fucking ball. Get it to D'Lo and Ant. That's my big thing, though, is the money situation is Gobert is not a good contract. Like, nobody else. I wonder if the Timberwolves were the only team calling. Like, Gobert's contract sucks, and he's really efficient, right? His true shooting percentage is always high. He doesn't take bad shots, but he's a complete zero on that end. He only takes putbacks and stuff he gets off the glass. It's a really tough contract to move, and so I think in the future, right, you always have to look at these things in terms of next offseason, in my opinion, because the NBA changes so fast, right? Coming into this season, so many people thought that the Nets were going to run away with the title. Well, they got eliminated in the first round. The Celtics came out, right? People can come out and love this move now. Well, if it's a complete and utter disaster, next offseason you are stuck with a $45-plus million contract that is an albatross. You are not moving that. Nobody's going to want Gobert. Like, you might be looking into D'Lo. Like, you just have some really bad contracts that are tough to move. The players that are just overpaid. And I can just see the T-Wolves. How long is it? Is Gobert doesn't expire next season. It's two seasons, right?
2025-26, he still has a player option.
Yes, you are effectively handcuffing yourself. Like, I guess this is what Minnesota looks like for the next couple years. I don't love it because it doesn't put them over the top. I don't think it makes them title contenders. Like you said, if Anthony Edwards becomes a superstar, like top 10 kind of MVP level candidate, I can maybe see this putting them over the top and becoming a title contender. But I don't see that happening. Maybe a 4 seed, 5 seed, and that's cool for Minnesota. But I don't think it wins you a title, and that's the ultimate goal. It's interesting. I'm interested in seeing how this Frankenstein works, but I don't think it wins them a title, and that's a goal. So I don't love it, and you're giving up a lot of capital in the future.
Yeah, the more I think about it, I mean, they clearly got better. I mean, Gobert is a one-man elite defense, and Utah was kind of an exception to that this year because they were so bad on the perimeter, but still with Gobert on the floor, they were an elite team defense. And he has done that for more than a half decade. He is a walking top five defense. That's really, really valuable when you have the kind of offensive talent that also exists in Minnesota. And they still have Jaden McDaniels on the wings. I mean, they bring back Torian Prince, who is a quality rotation guy. Naz Reid is a quality rotation guy. I don't love their perimeter defensive setup. Like, I don't know that it's better than Utah. Utah, you had one high-level stopper in Royce O'Neal. McDaniels is a really good young defensive player, but outside of that, I mean, yeah, D'Lo has progressed. Ant's a good athlete. Cat's not going to be a very good defensive four. I don't know. I mean, they're not going to be a top five defense even with Gobert. I know I just called them a walking top five defense, but the personnel is just not really good enough. And then their depth is maybe okay. I mean, I'm comfortable with them going seven deep, and we'll see who they can kind of scrap and add on top of that. Obviously, you know, they had their draft picks this year and they got better. I actually do think they got better. It's weird, but Cat can basically be a four offensively, I think. Like, he is versatile enough. Like, again, Gobert is just, he's not useless offensively because he's a big body and a very good screener and a pretty good athlete, huge lob target. He's a very efficient scorer off the roll, but it's just so replaceable. And so he's going to be ultimately the dominant paint force here. Like, I don't use the word dominant to mean Rudy Gobert is going to dominate people. I mean, he is going to have the majority of the paint touches, and Kat's going to have to operate more from the perimeter. And Kat does operate a lot from the perimeter as is. It's just a little weird. And defensively, I don't think it's great for Kat, but still adding Gobert is going to make them a better team defense, even than what they could have been with Jared Vanderbilt and Pat Bev, who were probably their two best individual defenders last year. Gobert, I do think, is individually valuable enough to surpass that. But then it's like, okay, well, we're tied into Rudy Gobert for 4 years. And ultimately, I don't think there's a title ceiling there that's very easy to achieve, even though I think Ant is a future top 10 guy. I am a huge, huge Kat defender. And I think he could be a top 10 guy in the league or very, very, very close to it. And Gobert is another top 30 guy and insane defensive force. It's and D'Lo, you know, if he's your fourth best player, you're not doing so bad for yourself. And I don't dislike their other rotational pieces. So I think Minnesota's going to be really good. I do think they're going to be really good, but it's weird. It doesn't get you to the championship ceiling, but it's also like, what can we do? Can we just, you know, hate on every move that doesn't take you to the championship ceiling? I don't think we can. What do you think about this for Utah?
I love it. I mean, you're essentially getting, adding in Walker Kessler to the mix as a first. You're essentially getting five firsts for Rudy Gobert. I mean, that's about as good as I think you're going to get. I don't know. I mean, some of the pieces they got, Beasley's cool. I like them getting Balmaro. That's kind of underrated. I'd like to see him actually get some PT, get on the court, see if he can develop. I like it. I don't really think you're going to find a better deal. Again, five basically first-round picks for Rudy Gobert. You get off that contract. You get a lot smaller contracts that are easier to move. Pat Bev, Beasley, and I like them going in the direction of the full tank. I think this does signify something to us, Carson, that look, we said that maybe we thought Utah could run it back with Gobert and Mitchell if they moved the surrounding pieces, right? Conley, Bogey, some of these other guys. To me, this signifies that Donovan Mitchell is likely going to pack his bags and head somewhere else soon, too. I think that this is Utah kind of signifying to us that it's the start of a full rebuild. I mean, you're not making the playoffs. I mean, you took your... Without Gobert, this is not a playoff team. They're nowhere close. I don't care how good Donovan Mitchell is offensively and these surrounding pieces. I think they're going to move off. I think this is probably about as good as it was going to get for Rudy Gobert. I love it for Utah. And again, I don't know where these first-round picks lie. You know, Minnesota's probably going to be somewhere between 16 and 24 every year. We'll see in 27, 2029. You know, we have no idea what those picks are going to look like. But I think this is the best deal that you can get on the table. You get off the money. And if you're launching into a full rebuild, man, you're seeing a lot of teams do this, bruh. Just accumulating assets. Thunder, Spurs, Jazz hopping on the train now. Just get as many picks as you can for the guys because they are super valuable. And you want for next year so you can land Victor. And whoever wins Victor is going to win 12 NBA championships in a row. He's going to be better than LeBron, Carson. Better than Kareem. Better than MJ.
The tank for Wemby is on. I do think if you're looking at the direction of the Jazz, I mean, they traded Royce O'Neal right before this for a first, which, by the way, Brian Windhorst had one of the funniest moments in sports TV history, I think. Everybody go look at it. It was on First Take. For 2 minutes, this guy talked about the Royce O'Neal trade as if he was revealing some sort of evil plan. Like, slow rollout. Has everybody trying to guess at what they're talking about, at what he's talking about? It was an unbelievable dramatic performance, all to talk about how Royce O'Neal being traded signified that there was something very strange and sinister going on in Utah. It was so funny. Then he called him Royce Young at the end, the NBA reporter. Windy cracks me up, man. But I mean, it does tell you something, obviously, because that's a good rotational piece. And in conjunction with this, it's like, yeah, that's kind of blow-up mode. Because obviously, I'm sure they want to retain Donovan Mitchell, and they have him under control for another 3 years, and then he has a player option. But their roster's not close enough. I mean, as good as they can be offensively, Conley is dramatically overpaid at this point. The supporting pieces around are not there. I will say, I mean, I don't know that I would say they're not close to a playoff team, because I do think a really interesting piece here is Walker Kessler, who was, I mean, an all-time prolific shot blocker and defensive presence in college. And it's like, if he can, you know, legitimately have that high-end defensive impact and then just be solid roll man offensively for whatever he's going to get paid, a seventh of the value of Gobert, that would be interesting. But he's not going to be Rudy Gobert, obviously. Nobody's saying he's going to be one of the greatest defensive players of all time. And Gobert really was crucial to keeping their defense even afloat. So, yeah, they're not good enough to contend, obviously. I mean, that window has closed for them. I don't know if there's anything else big in the works here. I don't think so, because obviously they had to take on a lot of small and mid-sized contracts back to make this work. And I don't know that a ton of those guys really impact winning.
I was wrong. I mean, Woj at least says that the Jazz plan to retool around Donovan. So I guess he isn't going to go anywhere if I trust Woj.
Yeah, we probably should. He probably knows a little better than us. Yeah, that's interesting. They're going to have to do a lot of retooling. I mean, but again, they have him under control, and maybe this is what he wanted. Maybe he did want the split from Gobert, but it's just like right now you are burdened by that Conley contract, and you are burdened by the defensive deficiencies that exist for this team on the perimeter. That's what undid them ultimately. I do think Bojan is really good, but he is not a second option on a title caliber team, no matter what level of offensive balance they have. And Jordan Clarkson regressed, and they lost Joe Ingles, and now they don't have Royce O'Neal. And it's just like, I mean, yeah, they're going to have to enter mini rebuild mode here. Like, they're going to be a middle of the pack team after 2 years ago they had the best record in the league. And then, you know, I thought last year they were going to have the potential to be like that kind of contender again. And they certainly don't have that kind of personnel right now. But fascinating, man. The NBA is ever fascinating. Shall we talk about Malcolm Brogdon being traded to the Boston Celtics? Because, oh my God, it's been a big day, man. That was quite a deal. Daniel Tice, Aaron Nesmith, and a 2023 first back to the Pacers for Brogdon to the Celtics. Logan, what were your thoughts?
Highway robbery. I mean, that's exceptional value for Malcolm Brogdon. Exceptional value. Now, I wouldn't be surprised. Indiana's probably going to cut Tice. He'll end up back in Boston in the rotation. Nah, dude, Brogdon fits here so perfectly. We talked all of last season about what they needed. We saw it in the finals. It was the downfall. They needed a guy to set the table. And I know Marcus Smart came out. He was jaw-jacking, talking about all we didn't. Marcus, shut up, bro. Yes, you guys did. You guys need a real point guard who can run the offense, who can actually put the ball in the cup. And like, man, Marcus had a good playoff run. I don't want to hate on him too much, but he's not a true point guard. I think Marcus has progressed a lot in that regard as a ball handler, as a playmaker. He's become so much better. But you know who's a much better playmaker? Malcolm Brogdon. I believe he's like one of the only active guys with like a, I don't know, 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio or something like that. That's not that crazy of a margin, but Brogdon's one of few. And he fits this identity for this team so well. You know, he brings a lot of other stuff offensively that you don't have with Marcus Smart or Derek White too. More floor spacing, more difficult shot making. He's a better pure point guard and ball handler. And I mean, people forget, Malcolm Brogdon is a dog defensively. At Virginia, he was one of the most imperative pieces in anchoring the best defense in the country year after year. I can't tell you how much I love this trade for Boston. I don't know if they have made themselves the title favorite for me out east, because Milwaukee is still a scary beast with Giannis, Holiday, and Middleton. But I'll tell you what, I think I might like the depth in Boston a little more now. Even if it's just three deep, they are a solid three or four deep. You know, you've got, I don't know who they moved to the bench out of their starting lineup, right? Because you're going to go Brogdon, Smart, JB, Tatum, Williams. Yeah, I mean, so you're probably moving Horford to the bench, but they also get Danilo Gallinari. Gallo's not what he once was, but I mean, if I'm asking him to spot up in the corner and knock down some open catch and shoot threes, Gallo can do that just about as good as anybody. They're deep. You've got your real point guard. You've got, I mean, Brogdon is as good of a third option as you get. I mean, he is a damn near all-star point guard. Like, I don't know. I can't tell you how much I love this trade. I think that if you put me on the spot right now, I'd say that I would take Boston out of the East today over Milwaukee. Like, I just think this is that kind of trade. Shout out them for creating that trade exception, dude. I think this is the best deal that Boston could have done. I love this for Brogdon, too, because he has a chance at winning. Like, I just hated seeing him toil away in Indiana, too, not playing winning basketball. I'm excited to see this on the court, and I'm happy that Brogdon's in a winning situation.
I think you made the point that I was going to, which is I think that this legitimately reasserts them as the favorite out east. I mean, obviously they were the representative this year. I think I would have leaned a healthy Milwaukee going into these playoffs and going into next season, but I mean, the Celtics just got a lot better, man. And I think Brogdon is not only a very, very good basketball player, like fringe all-star level. He's never been an all-star. He's never deserved to be an all-star, but you know, he's been the first couple guys off who is at a clear position of need. I mean, to add a guy who has legitimate shot making and scoring ability, right? We've seen him hover around 20 a game the last couple years pretty efficiently. He was an 87th percentile pick and roll scorer on high volume. He has that kind of creation. He has the kind of perimeter shooting, the ability to score really on all three levels. And then is a legitimate facilitator, which I think obviously we saw that they needed more tempo setting, more direction, more of that stabilizing presence, and also is going to compete defensively and is not exploitable there. I mean, you're adding another 6'5 plus defensive guard. They can retain every single bit of their defensive identity. They can have more direction and more shot making offensively from the perimeter. And they're losing effectively no value from a team that just went six games in the finals. I mean, Nesmith and Tice were fringe rotational pieces at best. Who cares about their 2023 first? It's going to be the 27th to 30th pick next year. This is an unbelievable deal for the Celtics. And I mean, we know what kind of impact a guy like this can have. Like, obviously, Drew Holiday is a fundamentally better player than Brogdon because of his just game-wrecking ability defensively. But we know how much he elevated Milwaukee, which is a team that I would argue also needed more of that half-court stability and direction and some of that perimeter shot-making. Like, they just needed a really solid third option. And I think the Celtics very clearly needed a really solid third option and more playmaking, and Brogdon brings all of that. So I think they're the favorite out east for me again after this. I think this is beautiful. I think it's an incredible basketball fit. Their depth is better. Gallo is another really good depth piece. And they have everybody else under control. Like, they're not losing anybody. They're only losing the guys they traded. This is an incredible roster-building job by Boston. And to me, this is a much more legitimate title-caliber team than the team that just went six. Because, again, the biggest thing that we saw undo them was poor decision-making offensively, inconsistency because they're relying on tough shot-making from the wings, and they're reliant on Tatum and Brown making the right read and passing out of doubles every time, and they just weren't always ready to do that. And I just think Brogdon is a stabilizing force there. And, I mean, you empower those guys to be more versatile. You can run Brogdon, Tatum, pick and roll. And, again, you're not losing any size. You're not losing anything defensively. I just think it's a home run. I don't really have anything else to say. It's a phenomenal move.
Yeah, only thing I'll add, I think there's one thing still missing for Boston. I want them to go out and get one more just kind of bucket getter scorer off the bench. I'd prefer it to be on the wings. Like, somebody who can take minutes away from Pritchard or Grant Williams. Shout out Grant Williams. I love what he does off the court as a team leader in the locker room. I love what he does on the court too, man. He plays hard. He's a strong guy. Can knock down the open corner three. But he's not really versatile enough. And, I mean, we saw it, like, he had a good conference finals, right? When we got to the finals, he was pretty ineffective because he is limited offensively. So I think the one piece that I think really puts Boston over the top, and I don't know who that is because I considered, like, a guy like Terrence Ross or somebody like that. I think Ross kind of makes a little too much money now because they've already burned the trade exception on Brogdon. I want Boston to go out and get one more kind of decent bucket getter in the, and I know these skill sets are hard to find, but somebody in a Clarkson, Terrence Ross, kind of Lou Will, Jamal Crawford, just go out and get buckets off the bench. Again, that's a hard asset to find in today's NBA, a scorer of that caliber and come off the bench. If they get that, again, I think they're my favorite at the East. If they do that, they might be my favorite to win the title because I think that's all they're missing. But this was the biggest need that Boston it was the biggest need that they had, and they went out and they got a perfect fit. I mean, like Ace Ventura said, like a glove. I mean, it fits perfect, bro. I can't wait to see them play on the court because I think it's going to be beautiful, winning basketball. Is Boston a top five team on both ends next season, bro?
It's a really good question. they'll be the best defense in the league. I'm honestly pretty confident in that. And they have that kind of ceiling offensively. I mean, we know what they reached down the stretch of the regular season, but that was with Tatum being absolute supernova level. They're close. I don't know if they're top five offensively, but they're certainly top 10. And then I think they'll be the best defense in the league. And I think that, I mean, this is just a better version of the team that we already saw, again, make the finals. And their top eight, top nine even right now is terrifying. I really don't see much of a weakness on this team anymore. I honestly don't. Because even if Tatum isn't a top five guy, you know, he's a top 10 guy, clear apex scorer from the wing, high-level playmaker and stretches. Jaylen is a damn good second scoring option, and Brogdon is a damn good third option. And again, the tempo setter, and just a home run. We had another big trade of a young all-star caliber point guard, and that was DeJounte Murray to the Atlanta Hawks. The big return for the Spurs being three first-round picks. What did you think of this move, Logan?
I mean, I like it on both sides, especially for Atlanta. I don't even think three first-round picks is that bad for DeJounte, because I think when you have Trey and DeJounte under contract, I mean, I don't think those picks are going to be super high up. I think the Hawks have solidified themselves as they've solidified themselves in the playoffs and as contenders to make it out of the first round. You know, I don't think this makes the Hawks a title contender, obviously. Murray's going to fit here really well, though, because, well, one, you need someone to pick up for Trey's deficiencies that he has defensively. Murray does that easily as a two-guard. He's a good playmaker. He's great at getting downhill. Hopefully, this is the move that empowers Trey to work off ball a little more. It's somebody to take the ball out of his hands. Because, I mean, Bogey was just not that guy. And we kept waiting. Bogey just never became that guy. DeJounte is that guy. He does little stuff, plays hard, plays great defense, hits the glass. But he's hopefully the biggest impact that I hope he can have is setting the table for Trey. Because that's what he needs. Trey gets tired, man. Has nobody else to rely on to manufacture offense. And if DeJounte can produce reliable offense getting downhill and setting the table for other guys, and bam. I mean, it's what they needed. They needed a second guy to rely on and another ball handler. I like the supporting cast. I mean, you're returning DeAndre Hunter. I assume Clint Capella will be back. This will be a good team. And, I mean, they made an Eastern Conference Finals run with a much less talented team. Like, yeah, it was a little fluky, but you've got two genuine stars here. And I like the move for San Antonio. I didn't like what they did in the draft this year. We already covered that. I actually did not like any of the prospects San Antonio drafted. But they had to pick their direction, and so I applaud them for just saying, yeah, we're gonna get in the victor sweepstakes, try to land him, and get some more first. I think this is a mutually beneficial trade. I like it on both sides. But for the Hawks, I don't think this is a needle mover, and I hate crapping on moves that aren't title-moving teams. I've seen crazier things, though. I think there is a world in which the Hawks could maybe make another crazy Eastern Conference Finals run, because you have that supernova talent in Trae Young that can carry you through the storm, through the tough games. I think things are going to have to break their way for something like that to happen, but it's very doable. I think they're going to be better defensively, a lot better defensively. That was a struggle for Atlanta last season. I think they're probably top 15 with a guy like DeJounte now. You know, better than average, at least. DeJounte, DeAndre Hunter, Clint Capella, I think it's solid. I do wonder if they're still going to move John Collins. I think that is a variable. I've heard Collins, you know, rumored. I don't like that contract. I think you could get better guys on better deals. Even though he was efficient last season, Atlanta's going to be good. Somewhere between 6 seed or higher, maybe. And I can see a fluke ECF run, but I'm interested to see how they're going to work together, man. And like I said, if this empowers Trey to work off ball, I think this is I think it's a great move, because we just haven't seen that yet.
It's interesting. You're adding talent. You're adding a good bit of talent, young talent, on an incredible value contract for the next couple of years. He's only going to get like $34 million in total. That's really good. Obviously, two-way value, really strong playmaker, very good athlete. And was absolutely phenomenal post-All-Star break last year. I mean, after the break, it's only 16 games, but he was 25-8-9 on 57% true shooting, because the efficiency was the biggest gripe with him throughout the year, although he was in a really tough spot, obviously. Like, I don't think he's naturally gifted enough to be a number one option, but that's what he was forced to be given the state of that roster. But he certainly is that kind of pronounced playmaker, like can be a lead ball handler in that way. You just need really great scoring from the wings alongside him. But what's the weird dynamic about this is these were two of the six highest volume pick and roll players in the entire NBA last year. Trey is number one in that conversation, and DeJounte Murray was number six. So there's a lot of ball dominance there. And obviously, the Hawks have needed more creation. They have needed more playmaking from the perimeter. They have needed some sort of direction in the moments when Trae Young is off the floor, and you certainly get that here. I mean, the staggered minutes, DeJounte Murray being your point guard attacking bench units is insane. I mean, he's an all-star. He was an all-star last year. That's really good. What's going to be interesting is how they play together, just because, I mean, they both do need the ball a lot. And as much as we can talk about wanting to see Trae off ball a little more and, you know, what he does as a catch and shooter, what he could theoretically do moving away from the ball, I'm just not overly optimistic that he really buys in there. And then DeJounte off ball, he's not a good catch and shooter. Like, his outside shot has grown a bit. He does have the mid-range game, but he was sub 33% from deep this year. He was 34% on catch and shoot threes. So, yeah, he's a good athlete. He can maybe attack some closeouts and come downhill, but I just don't think you're getting close to the best version of DeJounte Murray if you're playing him off ball a lot, which is what I think they're going to have to do. So he's really good. They get better. He's certainly better than Danilo Gallinari, and those three first-round picks aren't on their roster right now. It's hilarious that the Spurs are trading a 24-year-old all-star, but like, that's just the state of the NBA, man. If you're not close, you just want to race to the bottom, especially when Victor Wembanyama is there. But I don't know. It's tough for me to see even an Eastern Conference Finals ceiling here. Like, I just don't think you're getting the maximum value between these two. I still don't think that they have enough defensively on the wings. They're really good. I mean, they're a very talented basketball team, but I think they're more of a mid-tier playoff team. Logan laughed because I said mid. I'm not calling them mid. I'm calling them a mid-tier playoff team. Shall we talk about Jalen Brunson getting 4 years? What did it end up being? $106 million to go to the New York Knicks? What do you think about that, Logan? That's your guy. That's your boy.
Shout out Jalen Brunson for getting a bag, man. I'm always happy when my guys secure a bag. I made a video on Jalen Brunson a while back. I called him the ultimate winning basketball player, and I still fundamentally believe that, man. Jalen is a fundamental dude, is just a word that I would use to describe Jalen, man. He's got a pretty-ass game. Kurt Goldsberry does the scores, leading scores by zone. Brunson was like the leading guy from, you know, like 10 feet, and he's 6'1". Like, that little area, man, he's got a dirty little post game in there, counters, no matter who is on him. He's a grimy bucket, man. Like, Brunson's solid. He's great out of the pick and roll. He's a good catch and shooter. He attacks closeouts. He's a good playmaker. I mean, when Luka was out there, Brunson was playing his ass off as the number one guy. And he is a tough bucket from anywhere on the court. He is a beautiful basketball player to watch. Great in transition. Pretty good, you know, tries defensively. But I wouldn't have paid him $100 million. And that's just point blank. I have no idea what the New York Knicks are doing. Like anybody does. I have no idea what the Knicks are doing. Somebody always bites on guys when they have big things in the playoffs, right? The Oakland Raiders were always infamous. Whoever balled out in the Super Bowl, right? They get a little bit of NFL talk for you here on the NBA pod. Who was the guy in the Super Bowl? Larry Brown? Not Larry Brown. Two picks. He had two interceptions on Neil O'Donnell. Was it Larry Brown?
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay. They pay him an exorbitant amount of money because he had a good game. Desmond Howard returns a kick in the Super Bowl for a touchdown. They give him a lot of money. And here we go. The Knicks do a classic Knicks move. And Jalen Brunson has a nice little playoff run, and they serve him a bag. I would take Jalen Brunson as my starting point guard any day of the week because he's that guy, man. And he's a winner. He does so many little great things for your team. And so I like the Knicks acquiring him. And in the grand scheme of things, I believe he's 14th among point guards for average annual salary. So he's an above-average point guard, and you're paying him above-average point guard money. So I think in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it's that bad, but it's like when you're paying a guy like this, you want him to be a superstar, And Jalen Brunson just isn't that. And I don't know what the Knicks are expecting this to do to the rest of their team. You're taking the ball out of R.J. Barrett's hands, which I don't particularly agree with. Not a lot, because Brunson can play off ball. We saw him do it with Luka. I would want the ball in R.J. hands as much as possible for growth. Then you look, you have a really bad contract in Julius Randle. Julius sucks. Like, I would not want Julius Randle on my team. You overpaid him because he had a good season. I don't blame them for that because, I mean, he was All-NBA third team. You got to pay a guy like that. It's just, I don't even see the Knicks making the playoffs next season. And that's kind of my gripe is, yeah, you've gotten a really good third or fourth guy. And you're paying him to be your number one or number two. And I just don't see the Knicks making the playoffs next season. I love Jalen Brunson. Shout out to him for getting his money. He deserves it. He is a talented basketball player. But when the Knicks don't make the playoffs next season, are you moving Brunson and Julius Randle? I also feel bad for the Mavs, too, because I wanted the Mavs to retain him. That's a really sucky piece to lose. I mean, Brunson was... Do you think Brunson was their second-best player last season?
Not even close.
Yeah. I mean, now you've got Christian Wood into the fold, but it sucks because It's such a nerd sesh lineup. Jalen Brunson, Luka Doncic, and Christian Wood. It sucks for Dallas. Shout out Brunson getting his bag. The Knicks aren't going to make the playoffs, and so this... I don't want to say it effectively means nothing. It means nothing. You're not going to be playing basketball when it matters most. So, thanks. Let me ask you this. Is it better than the Knicks not doing anything?
No, I don't know. I mean, it's just such a weird situation because what are they going to do? I don't know. I'm bummed. By the way, it was 4 years, $104 million, so 26 per year. I'm just bummed to see Jalen Brunson going to a situation that is not ideal for winning basketball. I mean, I'm very glad he got his money, and he deserved it, and he needed it because he had that second-round rookie deal before this. And, I mean, he's going to be making, you know, almost... he's going to be making 15 times per year what he was on that deal, which is great. He's a very, very good basketball player, versatile and smart and efficient. And, I mean, as a scorer and a playmaker, he just does the things that you need to win basketball games. But that's why I want to see him in a winning situation, because I think that the ideal Jalen Brunson is the Jalen Brunson who can be a secondary ball handler, who has, you know, the ability to even come off the bench and stretches and attack those units. And, I mean, we saw what he was capable of in the playoffs and moments, and he ended up averaging 22 a game, still on solid efficiency in that run. But I don't think he should be put in a position where that's what he has to be expected to do night after night after night, because he's not an elite athlete. He's not a great playmaker. He's not an electric perimeter shot maker. He's a really, really good point guard. But he is not he's not a star. He does not play star basketball. And so to put him in a position where he has to be a lead option, I just think is unfortunately setting him up to not be the best version of himself. I'm sure he can score 20 a game on pretty solid efficiency, and then you can't look at that contract and guffaw, but it's just like, it's not taking you anywhere meaningful. And you're the Knicks, so maybe you could never go anywhere meaningful, but I don't know. I just think the optimism among Knicks fans about Jalen Brunson talking themselves into him is really funny because he's really good. He's not a star basketball player. He's not changing the complexion of your team. And, I mean, yeah, they've got money. They got to do something with it, I guess, but it's just weird. I don't know. They're just going to be stuck in this middle ground, and I hope they have fun there.
Something I do guffaw at is the Bradley Beal contract extension. Man, where'd you pull that one out of, bruh?
Guffaw?
Yeah.
It's in my everyday vocab.
I don't think I've ever heard that before used in day-to-day life. I don't know the exact details of the contract. You know, Beal gets like $200 million something. Yeah.
It's 5 years, $251 million.
I'm going to censorship warning
like
here.
Use the bathroom. Yeah. Line? Is that what you're saying?
I'm going to use a bad word here. Close your ears if you like Nerd Sesh, the family show. Carson has plugged his ears. Fuck you, Bradley Beal. I applaud you for getting your bag. Thank you for committing to never playing winning basketball. Now, I will say, you can still move him, but we talked about this on last show. When you are paying a guy like Bradley Beal this much money, he is getting older, he is 29 years old, it just makes it a lot harder to move because Bradley Beal is not getting any younger and he's not getting any better. So Bradley Beal can be a second or third guy. Maybe not a second. I think Bradley Beal can be maybe a second. I don't know.
I think he can be a second. He averaged 31 a game 2 years ago, lest we forget.
True. He can be a second or third on a title-winning team. So why'd you go back to D.C.? I get it. I get it that Washington could give him more money, and they gave him the most money. But I don't understand this for either party. For Washington, you get a very talented all-star caliber, sub-all-NBA caliber player. Okay, cool. You give him a lot of money. For Beal, he gets a ton of dough to play losing basketball this upcoming season and likely for the next five seasons. Washington is completely directionless as a franchise. They have Kristaps Porzingis. I don't know. Washington's not going to win any games, and I just want to see Bradley Beal in a winning situation. Shout out Bradley Beal for getting his bag. I hope he gets traded, but that doesn't seem like... It seems like Bradley Beal wants to be in Washington and score 30 points per game and be the fucking T-Mac of the 2020s. You know, I mean that in terms of production, points per game. I don't think Bradley Beal is ever the caliber of player that Tracy McGrady is. For all you dorks out there listening, Bradley Beal has improved so much, man, here because he's been in a bad situation. I think he's a much better playmaker now. He's such a better, well-rounded scorer. But I want to see talented guys like this in winning situations. And as a basketball fan, it just hurts me to see Bradley Beal going back to a 20-30 win team.
I will say, I think the reason this happened is pretty simple. There's not enough cap around the league, and Bradley Beal naturally wants to make $250 million when he can, and the Wizards still want to retain the best asset they have. What's funny is we've been in this Bradley Beal wants to make his money and the Wizards want to retain the asset mode for a few years now, and that has not changed. So we'll see if that move ever actually comes, but I don't have a whole ton to add. I mean, yeah, the Wizards aren't going to be relevant with Beal, and so it's just going to be a matter of, now that he has his money, does he force his way out at some point? Does he request a trade? And I would think at some point that moment does come, but we'll see. I mean, obviously he's under control for 5 years, but I would guess within the next 2 years Bradley Beal is off of Washington. I just don't see how this goes on forever.
Can I take those odds?
Yeah.
Let's make a taco bet. You want to go three of them?
Taco bet. For this will cash in 2 years from now.
Yes, a futures taco bet. I say Bradley Beal is still on the Wizards somehow.
Okay. I mean, that would be pretty hilarious in the modern NBA, where obviously it's constant movement. And it, swear to God, I thought this was going to be kind of a boring free agency for a couple of days, and now look at what's happened. Okay. We've got some other interesting names out there. I'll just throw some out, and you tell me what grabs you, what you want to talk about. James Harden declined his player option. Kyrie Irving obviously opted in, but now KD is gone, so I don't know what the Nets' direction is and where he falls with all that. And DeAndre Ayton is probably the biggest straight-up free agent name floating out there still. What would you like to examine out of that selection, Logan? We can hit it all. What do you want to hit first if you do want to? Okay, just tell me what you want to do.
Let's hit none of it. I'll start with Harden. I do think Harden is going to go back to Philadelphia. And you know what, James? I respect you for this move. James Harden could have been selfish. And I'll tell you what, if I was in the position to make $40 to $50 million on a player option next season, you're goddamn right I'm taking that money, and I'm telling Philly to shove it. You're going to give me my dollars, and I'm going to play subpar basketball. I'm going to average 18 points and 8 assists almost efficiently. I've deteriorated drastically, but you're still going to give me that money. So you know what, Harden? I applaud you for this move, because I think Harden is going to go back to Philadelphia. The reason I say this, and maybe I'm reading too much into the signings, P.J. Tucker is in Philadelphia. Harden and P.J. go way back. I just think this signifies that Harden is, you know, Harden's talked to him, and I think Harden is going to come back on a $10, $11 million deal. And for that, I respect him a lot, dude, because it can make Philadelphia a lot better. You've got a lot of talented assets here. Maxey, Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid, James Harden, now PJ. Like, PJ can start in this 5-2 now. Tyrese Maxey is going to get better next season. You know, Tobias Harris is a really good fourth option. PJ is a fucking glue guy. And I don't know. I can't keep looking at this as we need Star Harden, because we're not going to get Star Harden. We know what he is. We saw what he was in these playoffs. Harden is going to... He's a really good playmaker right now, and I'll give him that when you give him his space. But he's not a lead takeover scorer anymore, and so for him to be paid like the player that he is, I give him that, and I just give him props for freeing up other cap space for the Sixers to actually make moves, because it shows me that James Harden is... as hard-headed as he has been for so long, it shows to me that James Harden realizes that his basketball career is entering the twilight and he wants to win. And I'm happy that Harden wants to win now. Are the Sixers going to do it? Well, I mean, it depends on what they do with the rest of free agency. I would give Philadelphia a swing and chance, though, man. I think they need to still go out and make some more moves. I still like Boston and I like Milwaukee more, but... now they've got cap space and can make some moves happen. So I applaud James Harden for this move, man.
So I will be clear. I mean, I think Harden is still... did you say $10 or $11 million deal?
That's what the reports say, is that he might take like the minimum for a guy his age.
What? I don't think he even has to do that. I think it was just that the 47 player option was going to be such a massive number. That would be crazy. But, I mean, either way, the reporting is certainly that this is a move to give the team more flexibility to work in free agency. We saw that. They brought in P.J. Tucker on a legit deal. They bring in Daniel House. And, I mean, those are good signings. That's more shooting. That's more defense on the wings. Those are more quality role players. And we'll see, dude. Ultimately, it's going to come down to James Harden being James Harden. Because if James Harden plays at the level that he did even 2 years ago in Brooklyn when he was healthy... what
are you talking about? Do you genuinely expect that?
No, but that's what has to happen for them to win a title.
I will say this. Harden has been working his ass off way earlier. The second the Sixers season ended, he was in the gym working. He looks like he's in better shape. He's been grinding. I don't think that's a reality.
Here's all I'll say. Obviously, James Harden was not himself this year. He did not have the same burst. He did not have the same ability to create his own shot. And so it led to inconsistent scoring at best, really just nothing close to James Harden scoring that we're used to. What I will also say is he was dealing with a quad injury for a lot of the year, and yeah, that's going to hamper your explosiveness. So obviously he came back and he played down the stretch, but like, let's see what he looks like after an offseason. I'm not optimistic, but I also can't rule out the possibility that he was being affected by a lingering injury. And if he's James Harden, as we knew him to be, this is a title caliber team. If he is not, then this is ultimately pretty much the same team as last year. Like, yes, they've added more quality role players. That's great. But they need that second legitimate star, that lead perimeter initiator, which, as much as I love Tyrese Maxey, he is just not ready to be in the same way that Harden could be. Okay. What do you think is going to happen with Kyrie Irving?
I would expect him to get moved. I would expect both. Brooklyn has reportedly come out, well, I mean, especially after the KD trade request. Brooklyn has reportedly said they are prepared to lose both of these guys. So I honestly think Kyrie opting into his deal makes this easier. I don't know who goes out and swings for Kyrie. I mean, the only team that has been remotely interested is Los Angeles. Carson, would you want Kyrie Irving on your basketball team? I honestly, this is kind of ludicrous, I think, for me to say for a guy as just purely talented as Kyrie Irving. I don't know if I would want Kyrie on my team for the availability reasons, for the locker room shit, for just all the drama that Kyrie brings off court. Like, he's a capper. He's a capper. I want to play here in Boston the rest of my career. I'm never leaving my man number seven anywhere. I don't want to be in LeBron's shadow. There's just... this is a very simplistic take. Kyrie is a weird freaking dude. And I don't want weird freaking dudes on my team. Kyrie is just an unknown variable. At any given stage of a basketball season, he's an unknown variable. And I don't want that. And you're going to have to give up a lot to get a guy like Kyrie. A guy on a big contract and picks. And Kyrie is so wishy-washy with what he wants to do day in, day out. The only place I can see him going is Los Angeles, because I don't see any other teams being interested in giving up assets to go get him. And I wouldn't want him on my team, unless I'm giving up... I'll tell you a first. You know what I mean? If I didn't have to make the money work, I would do that. You know, if I wasn't giving up a whole lot. But you are going to have to give up a lot for Kyrie. And because of that, and all the headaches that he brings off, you know, with your team, I wouldn't want him, bro.
So, if I were the Lakers, I would 100% swing on Kyrie. Honestly, I think if I were most teams in the league, I would swing on Kyrie.
Really?
I do, dude. I mean, like, he's inconsistent health-wise. He's emotionally quite wild. But he is a hyper-efficient 27-point-per-game scorer last year, one of the most devastating isolation scorers and shot makers that exists in the league today. And that kind of offensive value, you don't just walk into, especially when his value right now has got to be at an all-time low. Like, Brooklyn is not in a position where they have to make a trade, especially because they're not going to get great returns. I mean, the reporting is that the Lakers are the only team that is legitimately interested. They're now minus 125 favorites to be his next team at DraftKings. That's, like, even way better than the Nets. So it seems that people think that the blow-up is coming. The Lakers cannot put together a very good trade package. They simply cannot. It would have to include Russ and then your 2027 first. Like, they don't have young assets. They don't have picks. And they don't have star-level players right now who they could move because Russ is not even close to a star-level player. So, I mean, that's not great for Brooklyn. It's just not. But maybe a first is what you're getting for Kyrie right now. I don't know, because Russ is a negative asset, realistically. Like, maybe he is just that level of toxic to them and they are so disinterested that they just want him gone and he would be in a basketball situation that he's happy about. And you could send Russell Westbrook to basketball Siberia, and it would be kind of funny. But, like, yeah, I don't know where else he's going. I think it would have to be the Lakers. They don't have a great package, but I don't think anybody else is putting together a better package. So maybe the Nets wait and hold out and see if they can get some midseason desperation where teams are like, ooh, we're close, but we're at a bit of a talent deficit. We could sure use that kind of shot making. I don't know. I think the Lakers would need to do it, though, because the Lakers aren't good enough right now when Kyrie puts them in a tier where it's like, all right, you have that kind of power from your top three. Mm-hmm. Role players start to not matter as much. You don't have the negative that's Russell Westbrook on the floor. Like, they would just be a lot closer.
I think the Lakers have to swing, right? You are committing to losing a title, wasting a year of LeBron James, and wasting a year of Anthony Davis if you don't. And I have my issues with the availability of Anthony Davis. I have my issues with the availability of Kyrie Irving. But it would be the best move that they could make. And they could still do. Again, I don't know why the Nets would want to do this. It is an expiring contract if you trade for Russ. Russ and two first for Kyrie. Straight up. I know that's not enticing, but it's like, it might be the best offer that you could land. And like you said, the Nets shouldn't be in a hurry to trade Kyrie. And we've seen teams waiting it out. Kyrie is still going to have value with the trade deadline next season. And contenders there, because again, it's a whole different ball game. Injuries happen. Teams are at different stages. Teams are hitting their stride. There are going to be people swinging for Kyrie as an asset if he's available and if they think that he puts them over the top. So no, I don't think the Nets should be in any rush to go and trade him. That's what makes this difficult. The only way I see this going through for LA is a three-team trade. I don't know what that looks like. It's kind of the only one. But, I mean, reportedly the Lakers are the only team interested in Kyrie at this point. There's one funny thing. Have you seen the interviews with Darvin Ham? Or they've been interviewing Darvin Ham and talking about Russ. And it just cracks me up because they're like, oh, yeah, was Russ like the only issue? And Darvin's like, oh, no, you know, Russ got a bad rap, this and that. And everybody just... I just like how everybody is, like, coddling him and trying to protect. And I get, Darvin Ham can't come out here and be like, yes, Russell Westbrook was the worst player in the league. He was the complete reason we sucked. But everybody masks it and just pretends like Russell Westbrook was not absolutely horrendous last season. If you had to bet, I would probably say that Kyrie is probably a net at the end of this free agency period. Are you in agreement?
I am. I honestly think what makes the most sense for Brooklyn is hold out and try to get your best package then. I mean, we saw it ultimately pay off in the Ben Simmons ordeal. Like, yeah, obviously Harden wasn't great down the stretch, but the value in the moment of getting James Harden better than what you certainly could have expected beforehand, teams get desperate, and the Nets don't need to get desperate.
Man, call me a fake fan. I completely forgot Ben Simmons was on the Nets. You know, he hasn't played basketball in so long. I forgot he was an asset. He existed. Wow. Yeah. If Ben Simmons is healthy, if Kyrie is healthy in here, let's say that KD has moved on, Kyrie and Ben Simmons are out here, the two Aussie boys, Are the Nets a playoff team in the East?
No, they're not. I think they're probably hovering right around 500, just below maybe. Cam Thomas is going to score 50 a game, though. Believe that. Believe that. Anything else you want to hit on here, Logan? Any other deals? Anybody else still on the table who really wets your whistle? I have one on my mind. I mean, we mentioned DeAndre Ayton. I honestly don't. I don't think he's that interesting. And I think what we're going to see is he's not going to draw a ton of money.
I think that Ayton is going to be forced to sign a deal for $20 million, something like, and that's appropriate value. I think that's how he should be paid. But Ayton was expecting the max. I don't think anybody's eager to give it to him, and especially the big rumor was that the Pistons were going to do it. Pistons go out and get Durin. I don't think the Pistons even want him. Like, and they've also got Nerlens Noel, Isaiah Stewart. They don't need another big, and they were the only team that was reportedly biting. I don't think Ayton is that interesting of a guy to talk about, and I think that he is ultimately going to take something that he perceives as less than his value.
I wonder if he even takes that $16 million qualifying offer for a year and tests the market again next year and just comes back to the Suns for a year. I mean, I'm sure he would like to lock up more money like than that in the moment, but if he wanted to do the bet on himself approach, but clearly it didn't work that well the first time. Oh, maybe should have taken that 4-year $80 million, whatever it was that the Suns initially put on the table. I thought that was appropriate value. He's not a max level player. He's honestly not that close. He plays the most replaceable position in basketball, and he does the most replaceable things. He just does them really well. But any team that is going to go out there and pay him $30+ million is going to handcuff themselves. And I think that this has been a good demonstration of how people value the center position unless it is at a true star level around the league. And I think that it makes sense. And I think the teams have been smart in how they've approached Ayton's free agency. Speaking of centers, the one signing that I would like to shout out is the Warriors bringing back Kevon Looney. 3 years, $25 million, I want to say. We talked about the decisions they were going to have to make with Otto Porter Jr. and GP2 and Looney all hitting the market. And I felt that Looney was the most important guy to retain. I thought he was their most valuable player out of that bunch this year, and I think he is at, obviously, a glaring position of need. And you bring him back on good value, and I think that that's a win for them. And GP2 goes out and he gets his bag with the Blazers, $28 million over 3 years. I'm happy for him. And I thought he was very good this year, but, you know, you have young wings, so let those guys step up and play. They've had a year of development. I just think it was more essential to keep Looney, given how important he was as a starter this year, as a defensive presence, as just a stabilizing force on the glass. Whereas, again, I just feel like the wing production, even from a guy who is a defensive hound, a dynamic athlete like GB2, is just a bit more replaceable, given the pieces the Warriors had in place.
No, definitely. And, I mean, with the variable that you have in Wiseman, Looney's imperative. And Looney showed that throughout the entire playoff run. I'm so glad they brought him back. I would have liked GP to come back. But, hey, GP's got to make his money, man. He's a video coordinator. You know, he's got to get his bag. And I'm glad he got it, man. He deserves it. He's worked his ass off. There are a few more I want to shout out. Mo Bamba comes back to the Magic, 2 years, $21 million. I just think that is insane value for a guy like Mo, like $10 million a year. Kind of a prove-it deal, you know what I mean? Because they do have, I think, a decision to make. I don't think Wendell Carter, Mo Bamba, and Paolo Banchero are all going to be here in two seasons. So Mo's got to prove that he can be solid, shot the ball better last season. I just think that's a good value deal. I mean, they signed him for less than what Nicholas Batum got, bruh. Victor Oladipo comes back to the Heat. I think that's a big deal. I thought I said Oladipo was going to go to the Knicks on some big deal last season. I thought he was going to get a bag now. So VO gets $11 million. That's a good signing. And the final group I'll shout out is the Bucks. I thought the Bucks have done an exceptional job so far in free agency. They bring back Bobby Portis on a 4-year, $49 million deal. They bring back Wesley Matthews, my mortal enemy, my nemesis. They bring back Javon Carter. They bring in Joe Ingles, though, baby. And I just like Ingles as a bench piece, man. So versatile, does a lot of stuff, can play make a little bit. It's going to be a good catch and shooter playing off of Giannis. So, yeah, I've liked what the Bucks have done in free agency so far. They've gotten moderately better with those signings. Bringing back Bobby, bringing in Joe Ingles, I think that's a big deal. Outside of that, Malik Monk's headed to Sacktown. Yeesh.
Yeah, I love the Jingles move. I mean, MLE is just really good value for a guy who 2 years ago I thought should have been the sixth man of the year, even though he regressed and then he had a season-ending injury. And, like, he's not probably going to be quite that player because he's going to be 35 very soon. Still, paying him $6.5 million is really good. He's a fundamentally winning basketball player. The last one I'll shout out is the Cavs bringing back Rubio for 3 years, $18 million. That is sweet value. That is, like, really, really good for a guy who sure isn't going to be super efficient as a scorer, but his playmaking value is immense. We know what he can do as a two-way guy. Like, I just really, really like Ricky Rubio, and I thought he was really good this year before he got hurt, so I'm excited to see him coming back. All right. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Free agency check-in part one. We'll see what else happens. Kevin Durant will probably be moved at some point. Kyrie Irving might be moved as well, and it's already been chaotic and wild. Rudy Gobert got traded 4 minutes into this podcast. So, glad that that happened then and not about an hour later. But hope you guys have enjoyed. As always, we appreciate your support. If you want more Nerd Sesh content, the good news is there's plenty of places to find us. Always check us out on TikTok at Nerd Sesh. Twitter is at @nerd_sesh. Instagram at Nerd Sesh. You can see all of our content there. TikTok is where we are most consistent with the trivia stuff. Lots of fun, and I'm sure we will do some more trivia podcasts soon as well. It's just the NBA has not died. It just keeps on going, but we are going to hit a real dead period, and then I'm sure we'll lean into the trivia. And if you want some exclusive Nerd Sesh content, well, there's a great place to find it. It's called SoBet. That's S-O-B-E-T. Honestly, the easiest way for you to find it is go out, check the link in our TikTok bio. Right now, we still have an offer going where the first 20 people to sign up using promo code FREENERDS, which again is that link in our TikTok bio, get a month free of SoBet. And what it is it's an exclusive premium betting advice service. You pay a subscription fee and you get access to our exclusive betting tips and content and stuff from lots of other really smart experts and creators. So we'd recommend checking that out, especially because you can get a month for free. So you might as well see if you like it. Certainly can't hurt. And yeah, that's pretty much everywhere you can find us. We've got a website. We haven't put anything new up there in a while, but it's nerdsesh.com. So yeah, appreciate you guys as always. NBA free agency is wild, but it has been a fun little journey thus far. And with that, as always, I've been Carson Brabber.
I've been Logan Camden.
And this was Nerd Sesh.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.